Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Tuesday, December 3rd edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour and 5 hour and 10 minutes or so, as we go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me as we kick off this week here on Bang the Book Radio. Two guests joined me on this Tuesday edition of the show. The first, Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline. We'll chat some NFL and some NHL with him. And on the second part of today's show, professional handicapper Ralph Michaels from WagerTalk.com will join me. We'll talk college football and college basketball during that segment. Over at BangTheBook.com, we got you covered for all four of those sports betting markets, including Parker Michaels' daily NHL picks. 2-0 last night, getting back on track there for him. Definite must-read every day over at the website. My college football power ratings updated for the round of conference championship games. We'll have a bunch of NFL stuff as we go throughout the week. Big week in college basketball, the Big Ten ACC Challenge. Bunch of really good non-conference games. We'll cover those over at the website as well. To go along with UFC, I think, returns this week. We'll have a preview for that. Whole bunch of stuff going on. Make sure you head on over to the website and check it all out. Finally, as you know, this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio, presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook. BTB and the number 200 is that promo code. 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook, 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino at BetDSI. It's only a game until you bet it. Couple guests on the program here today, and we start with Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline. Brian, how's it going today, man?
I'm good, bud. And you're talking about all the goodies. I think the last few weeks we were doing a lot of stuff, golf, and we did some NASCAR, and we do a lot of videos. But in the last little bit, with golf having wound down, our focus on the video has been NFL games. I think, knock on wood, we've been knocking those out of the park. So check the videos out. We do a Bang the Book.
You know, go ahead.
Yeah, no. We had the Bills on Thanksgiving Day, and the Jets of all teams were kind of a team. The 1 week we thought that was a buzzsaw, the Raiders flying cross country, and then the next week switching to Dalton. The Bengals are looking at this like, boys, if you're going to win a game, this is the game. And again, it's a lot of the stuff we talk about. I think, you know, when we do the podcast, the videos, you gotta see the forest through the trees. Adam, you know, 1 week to the next, some of these results on a week-to-week basis, be it football or hockey or whatever. I mean, the schedule is so impactful in handicapping. It's not, oh, this team's better than that team. It's like, well, okay, how long did it take them to get there? Or what game did they play last week? How physical a game was that? What do they got left in the tank from that? A team could look great 1 week, but it exacted such a toll on them. They come out and get boat raced the next.
Yeah, especially here at this time of the year, especially when you talk about the NFL too, because now you've got some real imbalances. You've got some teams that have had bye weeks here, you know, a double-digit week number, a bye in week 10, bye in week 11, something like that. You've got other teams that had a bye week 4, week 5. You kind of wonder about them and some of the emotional games that they've been playing here recently. We'll talk about one of those teams here on today's segment. But yeah, make sure you head on over to our Bang the Book YouTube page. Check out the videos done by myself as well as the videos done there by Brian. But Brian, you kind of touched on it a little bit here. We always like to take a little bit of a look back, take a look back at the previous week in the NFL. We'll do that here with week 13. What kind of stood out to you from this most recent round of games?
Well, I will tell you, it's one of the most enjoyable Thanksgivings I've ever had. That was terrific, the way the Bills played at Dallas. And, coincided perfectly when the turkey came on the table, too. I mean, I couldn't have timed it out any better. But, seriously, I mean, that was – and again, you know, bud, I'll go back to that to just say the kind of things you should take into account when you're handicapping. And – you know, see, my problem is I'm damned if I do, damned if I don't. I mean, I follow the Bills and have an open rooting interest for them. But I'm not going to burn money on them if I think they're going to lose. Maybe I'd focus on a total. So if I'm stepping up to the plate with the Bills, I really like them. And the Thanksgiving Day game, there was such an intangible, and There were a boatload of intangibles for that game. And we won't go over the top about this game, but it is more of an overview. But the Bills last year had the number 2 defense in the league. Trey White, all this Stephon Gilmore this, Stephon Gilmore that. You know, he's a great cornerback. I got news for you. Trey White is right there. Trey White is, if not, you know, right alongside Gilmore, he's the second best corner in football. And he got scalded. Lattimore won the Rookie of the Year over him. And then last year, he, Poyer, and Hyde, the safeties, they had the number two defense in the league. All three of those guys were Pro Bowl players. All three of them got snubbed. Why? Because they're never on national TV. They're never on Sunday night. They're never on Monday night. This was a game, and oh, by the way, you happen to have Beasley going back. But this was a game for them, for the football, their colleagues, their peers, to actually see them play. Don't kid yourself. That was a huge motivational thing for them. And, yeah, Dallas is a bit out of sorts, but Buffalo, you know, they played their lungs out. Hey, the game coming up with Baltimore, I'll tell you, there's another little one. You throw it in there, and you get extra time to prepare. But you got John Brown going against the Ravens, and here's the Bills. Can they beat these guys? Well, they get extra rest. Baltimore just played this, you know, tough game with San Francisco, but the motivational thing is Buffalo. If they win this game, they legitimately put pressure on the Patriots later in the day to beat the Chiefs. So if Buffalo wins that game, it actually puts heat on the Patriots. And if the Patriots were to, if the Buffalo wins Sunday and the Patriots lose to the Chiefs, then who'd have thunk this? Buffalo would actually control their own destiny to be the one seed. So there's 4 weeks to go in a season, but you got to look at this and say, they are saying this is the game.
Yeah, that's an angle I look at in the NBA sometimes, too, where teams kind of get, you know, one of those spots on the ESPN doubleheader, especially the Western teams, like a Sacramento or a Phoenix, somebody like that. You know, they get a chance in that spotlight because they're playing, you know, the Lakers or the Clippers or, you know, Utah or Denver, whoever else. And that's an opportunity for those teams. You know, they're going to show up in those situations. It's definitely something to consider here across all of the major leagues. But you know, you talk about motivation, let's look at the opposite side of it. Carolina, that's abysmal at home. Yep. That's embarrassing. Jacksonville, embarrassing at home. The Chargers off a bye, down 14-0 to Denver using Drew Lock after the first quarter. Miami outscoring Philadelphia 23-10 in the second half. Real bad look for the Eagles. Man, I don't know if, you know, week to week we're going to see a lot of these teams quit, but Carolina and Jacksonville really stand out. I mean, that's just inexcusable.
Well, the funny thing is those two teams you identified, I spent the better part of last week talking about, you could see it with Jacksonville. Jacksonville has run for the bus. The week before that, they're pushing and shoving after plays. Fournette, who got thrown out of a game last year, running off the bench across the field to get in a fight, come off the bench again. It's like, okay, you know, Marone's getting fired. That's a mess. They're running for the bus. You could see that coming. Then the Carolina one, we threw the cautionary thing out there. The Redskins are nothing. And you got the kid on the road. But they threw the sink at the Saints and had a heartbreaking loss to the Saints, and basically that was all she wrote. Their season was done. How would they react to that? So, sure enough, 14-0 lead, and then they just went to sleep. I'll tell you what. Now focus on the Carolina-Atlanta game, and I would say I think one of the best bets of the week is the over in the Carolina-Atlanta game. When teams have packed it in, that lack of intensity, it shows up on defense. Atlanta's die has been cast for a long time. They showed some pride off the bye, but this Carolina secondary, the whole nine yards, you know, they've packed it in. Atlanta's going to score. Carolina can go up and down the field. The Falcons had that great game against Drew Brees. Now they're back to being what they're going to be. But the offensive guys know which way they're going. You know, I think these guys are going to be running like gazelles in the secondary. That may be the best bet of the week, if you ask me. Carolina, Atlanta over, just because they've half run for the bus.
Yeah, I agree. You know, it was funny. I was looking at my opening line report for college football, and, you know, we've got five games out of the 10 that are rematches here from earlier on in the season. The only one where the totals adjusted up is Ohio State and Wisconsin. And, of course, Ohio State scoring points on everybody, Wisconsin playing better on offense. But the rematch in the other four games, the total's lower in every one of them. Because for all the reasons you just kind of outlined there, as the games mean more, things tighten up a little
There's
bit.
There's no doubt. And by the way, on the back end of college football, these guys, obviously conference bowl championship games, or they're playing to get a better bowl. So these games in college, you know, mean a lot when, I mean, I know NFL guys are playing for jobs, but it's just, it sinks in between your ears. And I would throw this at you. I don't think we were even planning on this, but when Penn State played Ohio State, I mean, I just said, look, man, who had Ohio State played? And everybody loves them, and they're awesome, and indeed they are. But 18.5 points, like, what was that? And then Penn State comes back with a backup quarterback and makes that game doggone interesting and covers. Well, I'm looking at this game. You're getting the same balloon number with Wisconsin playing Ohio State. I loved Wisconsin laying 3 against Minnesota. Minnesota was this nice story, but they hadn't played a soul. And, you know, this time of year, run stopped the run. Wisconsin just murdered them. But I'm looking at the number, and the number's inflated for one of the reasons is Wisconsin, when they played Ohio State, got drilled 38-7. Now, A, the game was at Ohio State. But the real rub is you can almost throw that game completely out of the mix because Wisconsin, looking ahead to play Ohio State, lost to Illinois 24-23. It was a punch to the gut, a shock to the system. They had an adverse reaction to that loss going in to the Ohio State game. This version on a neutral field, Wisconsin and Ohio State, I mean, and if you go back to that first game, Ohio State was a 14.5 point favorite. Now you're getting this inflated number. I'm telling you, Wisconsin is now the football team they were. They're getting way too many points, and you got the pressure for Ohio State that it's all there on a platter for them. I like Wisconsin catching those kind of points, but it's just a matter of when you're talking about the rematches. Oh, it's just low-hanging fruit. Let's look at the – oh, they killed them, 38-7. They're extenuating reasons why.
Well, and that's the thing, too. You know, there are stats for everything out there. And I know that you're not an analytics guy. We've kind of talked about that before here on the segments. I'm a little bit more of a stats guy than you are. But there is this psychological element to sports betting that is really – you can't quantify it. You know, you cannot assign a numeric value to it. It's just something that factors into the handicap. And to circle this back to the NFL here, again, like we just mentioned, Carolina and Atlanta playing for nothing. Usually you wind up getting less of a defensive effort, more of an effort from the guys that want to pad their stats, hit bonuses, get contracts, so on and so forth. So in these games where there's nothing on the line, there are no stakes, things don't matter, as long as weather's not, you know, a compromising factor, you got to look for some overs in these types of games for sure.
All right. Here, you want one more goofy one? I mean, again, just go back to that Bills-Ravens game for 1 second. I guarantee it. Nobody in the world is going to be sitting there bringing this up. I just don't happen to have a life. And, you know, but I'm telling you, if you go back last year, the opener of the last season, and I'm telling you, this is a thing in the Bills locker room. And, you know, nobody's going to even talk about this. They lost the opener last year at Baltimore 47-3. And then went on to have the number 2 defense in the league. Well, that was a game that Nathan Peterman started, giving them the short field and this, and Baltimore stepped on their neck and ran it up. If you think for 10 seconds this defense does not remember Baltimore gleefully stepping on their neck 47-3 at the beginning of last year, these guys got the license plate. No one's ever going to even mention that as part of the handicap for this game. But trust me, in that locker room, these guys are like, we got the license plate. Remember these jerks? But that's not an analytics thing, right? But that's an intangible thing that I can guarantee you in that locker room the Bills are talking about. And teams, all teams, find whatever thing they can latch on to that gives them a bounce in their step.
Yeah, and that's interesting, too. I mean, I kind of liked Buffalo in this spot anyway. But that's an interesting thing that I didn't even think about. It didn't cross my mind at all whatsoever. I kind of like Baltimore for the simple fact, or I kind of like Buffalo, excuse me, for the simple fact that, you know, Baltimore has just been bludgeoning teams. I mean, like you said, they love running it up. Last week, they finally play that close game. I think there's got to be some carryover to that. This late in the season, you know, you play this close defensive struggle. San Francisco, the first team to really give anybody a blueprint on how to slow Lamar Jackson down. I'd like Buffalo to begin with here. I'll be kind of interested to see where this line goes, because Buffalo is a team that, you know, you've obviously heard the naysayers all year long.
Of course.
People saying Buffalo's not as good as their record, this and that. And they're probably not. And I understand that. But Baltimore is as good as their record, as good as all their metrics are. I just think the spot dramatically and clearly favors Buffalo. I'm curious to see where this line goes. It's 6 pretty much market wide right now. But I'm real intrigued to see where the sharp, influential money comes in on that game.
I think that's 6. 6 is probably the number. But again, like segments of seasons and things you got to take into account. Oh, by the way, Josh Allen, after making, they literally handed the Eagles a win on a plate, fumbling deep in their own end. But Josh Allen has protected the football, and he is improved so much, it's not even funny. But on the little heater they're on now, this is a different team now. And because he was hurt, he pulled a hamstring, and they weren't using him enough to begin with. But Devin Singletary, the Bills can actually run the football now. This kid's a weapon. I mean, and he's now become more the focal point, moved ahead of Gore, and they've got a weapon in the backfield that they've really only been using the last month.
Well, as interesting as it is to talk about that game and as good it'll be to talk about the next game I want to hit on with you, I do want to circle back to Thursday, December 5th here, much to my chagrin, much to your chagrin, I'm sure, as well. But this is a game we need to talk about a little bit. Dallas and Chicago. Not a short week for either team. Both teams playing on the Thanksgiving holiday. So the regular 6 days off, although obviously your schedule, you know, a little bit different, your body clock thrown off some, you're out of your routine playing Thursday and Thursday. But Dallas, 2.5 or 3-point favorite on the road. Total in the lower 40s here, down from 43.5 to as low as 42.5. What do you think about this one here, Brian?
Well, I would say this to you that I don't think we're reinventing a wheel here. Who's the better team? Is Dallas in terms of personnel and the whole nine yards. But again, situationally, Dallas, I think virtually no matter what here, unless Philadelphia completely pukes again this week, that whole thing is coming down to the Dallas Eagles game. The Bears at 6-6, albeit a shot over the moon, with the Vikings losing. The Vikings losing basically brought Chicago and the Rams back into the equation. Now, the Rams got to win out, and they face an absolute gauntlet. But the Bears are sitting here. This is their playoff game. They're done if they lose this. The Cowboys, in the back of their minds, know they still have that, you know, the division is coming down to that game with the Eagles. I really think Chicago can circle the wagons here. And the question is, you know, can they shut down Dallas offensively? I think it's a correlated parlay. I think if you like Chicago, it's Chicago in the under. If you like Dallas, it's probably Dallas in the over. I think it's correlated.
No, I think that makes a lot of sense. I mean, obviously, you know, it's been a tough week for Dallas because you get that short week game, you lose to Buffalo, you play again on Thursday. And like I said, there's already some disruption and, you know, a little bit of a uniqueness to that type of situation.
But
and
they're
all
both
week long.
But they're both the same amount of time, right? They both played Thursday. So the NFL schedule makers got this right.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's the same amount of time. But also, too, you know, for Dallas here, all this talk in between the games about Jason Garrett. And, you know, we've all seen the video clip. We've seen the GIF. We've seen, you know, it doesn't look like the players like Jason Garrett. It almost seems like Jerry Jones kind of on an island with this guy right now as he tries to save the playoff berth for this season and then fires Garrett when all is said and done. But that's a real weird dynamic. I know the Bears have had a lot of problems in their backyard this year, but for Dallas and all this talk about firing Garrett and plenty of reasons, plenty of rationale to do so. I think Chicago's probably just in a better mindset overall here, too.
Yeah, and they, by the way, they enjoyed their Thanksgiving, right? And in that game against the Lions, albeit the Lions, they were down in that game and fought back. And Trubisky, actually, who takes incredible heat in Chicago, Trubisky actually played pretty well in that game. So clearly they're coming into this game feeling good, where now, you know, it could go one of two ways. Dallas is a mad team, goes in there and steps on their neck, or Dallas and the weight of expectations they just have on, you know, every time they take the field. But now the coach, you know, looking over his shoulder, and, you know, and Jerry Jones, that nonsense to me, I don't know. You would think this guy's a smart guy, right? He got more money than God. I just don't get. If you go all the way back to the last time and they were a dynasty, you know, what have they ever won since this guy took over football operations? I just sit up there and be on your cameo camera shot 40 times a game. Get some football people in here to run this damn thing. I mean, his ego just gets in the way.
Yeah, it does. I mean, I wish I was in a position to sit here and say I know what I would do. I wish I had that kind of FU money. But at the same time, like you said, I mean, you'll get some football people in there and just sit up in your box and keep printing money. You know, I mean, that's basically what you're able to do there, you know, with your standing and with the Cowboys. But in any event, one other game I want to talk about here, and I think this one's interesting. I think the early week line move, very interesting here too. San Francisco and New Orleans. New Orleans, 2.5-point favorite, total down from 45.5 to 44. Line open 3.5. So it's been San Francisco money here early. I don't think I agree with that move. What about you, Brian?
They played a great game at Baltimore. But you talk about back-to-back. There's the travel, of course. But they put a lot into that Baltimore game. That was a phenomenal football game. And in fact, I would think you'd actually upgrade San Francisco, even in defeat there. You know, playing that game on the road, crummy conditions. They did everything but win the game. It was like it really was who had the ball last. So, you know, San Francisco deserves all the credit in the world. But New Orleans is sitting here going, hey, wait a minute. This is home field advantage throughout the playoffs. This is a highly motivated team. And, you know, and San Fran's got Seattle coming up. New Orleans is sitting there, hit the gas now. And Breeze is fresh too, right? I mean, let's not lose sight of the fact, you know, this is a quarterback. He missed all that time where other guys maybe are, you know, hitting a wall a little bit. Breeze is probably, you know, on this crescendo where he's probably ready to play as good as he could possibly play. What is he back now, Adam? The days run together on me. About 5 weeks, 4 weeks?
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah, about that.
You know, so this is New Orleans saying, look, and I get, listen, man, that's been one of the best stories that's just fallen under the, fallen off the table all year long. New Orleans, when Breeze went out, it was like, okay, if they can just go 4-4 till Breeze gets back, they'll be okay because they're in the NFC South. For Bridgewater to have, you know, really just saved their season, and that defense played at a ridiculous level. The one weird one was the effort against Atlanta, but it may not bite them in the butt, right? I mean, if New Orleans says, let's make a push, and I'm like, how many times can you take the punch to the gut and keep coming back? This New Orleans team is as resilient as it gets. At first you had the Diggs miracle with the Vikings and then the nonsensical non-call on the interference last year. This team, man, they're the real McCoy. I think they're mentally strong. They're loaded with talent. And if they win this game, they host the Colts at the Titans, at the Panthers. They're sitting here going, listen, man, let's run this table, and the road is going through us again. It's been great for San Francisco, and I just had this funny feeling, you know, you're going to have an 11-12 win San Francisco team, you know, going to play an 8-win Dallas or Eagles team, which is, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah, as far as this game goes, I actually do like New Orleans in this spot. Probably going to wind up on them in the contests here later on in the week. I just think this is such a difficult spot for San Francisco. Now, they're not going all the way home. They are practicing this week in the state of Florida. So, you know, a little bit of sun, maybe a little bit of R&R throughout the week if they can grab some. I think they need it. This is one of those teams that I mentioned in the open here that had a week four bye. Now, they've only played four road games in that span, one of them, of course, last week against Baltimore. But I just have to think that with a team getting to these heights for the first time under Kyle Shanahan, the first time, you know, really in a while since Colin Kaepernick took him to the Super Bowl with Harbaugh a few years ago, I think this is a really difficult spot. I just think that this is a lot and a big ask. Taking on New Orleans when you know you've got a free win next week against Atlanta, then you've got the Rams and the Seahawks, that Rams game on a short week to finish up the regular season here. I think this is a really difficult spot for them. And I think New Orleans playing well in the dome, you know, a very solid home team as they've always been in the Breeze era. I disagree with this line move. I get the respect for San Francisco. I agree with upgrading them off of that Baltimore performance. I just don't know if they've got enough in the gas tank this week, but they can circle the wagons next week and get an easy win, you know, blowing out one of Kyle Shanahan's former employers.
That's great information about them not going back home. And to me, that certainly upgrades their chances because it's a bonding thing and your body clock and all those things that go into play. And if memory serves, Adam, can you confirm this? Did they not? Now, clearly, the opposition's a lot different. Let's start with that. But did they not beat Tampa Bay in the opener at Tampa Bay? Did they not go to Ohio and practice for the week before going in and destroying the Bengals in week two? I think they've done this earlier in the season.
You're correct.
Did they go to Dayton possibly or Youngstown. Something like this? Youngstown. Okay. So
just as much of a dump, by the way.
Well, but the bottom, you know, be it an exotic location or a dump, they're on the road working together and bonding, and it worked for them earlier in the season. But the Bucs to the Bengals is a lot different than the Ravens to the Saints.
Oh, I agree. I completely agree, and I'm sure I'm going to have angry people from Youngstown in my mentions on Twitter, so I apologize for that. But, you know, it is one of those things where, like you said, it is kind of a bonding thing. And again, the idea of being in Florida, you know, maybe does kind of re-energize the batteries a little bit. I've kind of talked about that in the NHL with teams from cold weather cities that get to play in Florida in December and January. And it's like, holy shit, this is great. I see the sun and there are actually plants growing, you know? So, I mean, I get
Maybe college football, spot. Look at all these teams late in the year. It happens all the time. You know, go over and play Hawaii. You know, they by a mile be the better team, but all of a sudden you get over there, and yeah, your mind's supposed to be on football, but, you know, you see the beach, you see the sun, you see the palm trees, you see girls in bikinis, and then you go out and you, like, what happened? We scored a field goal.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I guess we'll see. Like I said, I disagree with the line move. I think 2.5, there's good value on the Saints. We'll see if this one goes back up. But I do want to spend a few minutes talking about hockey here with you, Brian, because it's what we always do. Before we dig into the Tuesday night card here, and it is a pretty extensive one at that, any league-wide observations you want to hit on here?
Just it's another NHL season, Adam. It's teams coming home from long road trips. They're a fade the first game home from a long road trip. Dogs, barking dogs, you know, beat these teams when they come home. Everybody's, oh, they're home. No, they're home, getting, you know, reacclimated to their family and kids. And, you know, the first game home from a long road trip is a tough one. Ceremony games, we're always watching for those where teams, the home team's out there for a ceremony, maybe not ready at the start of games. You play for starters, you play the visiting team in the first period. The dad's trips are about to come up. I know the moms seem to be the order of the day. The Oilers, I think, had their moms. They went 1-1, and later in the week, the Blackhawks, you were telling me, their moms are going to be on a trip with them, and you just look for that. But the one thing I would just say, this schedule is so compacted, it's ridiculous, where teams are playing 3 games in 4 nights. There's a lot of back-to-back nights in play. Just check, find out the backup goalies, man. When the backup goalies are in there, I don't think the odds makers do anywhere near enough even putting 20 cents attached to the number, you know, shading the game to the over. It, to me, it should be an automatic half goal. So look for backup goalies. I mean, hockey's really, history repeats itself. It's just about information.
Yeah, and Parker Michaels, our NHL guy over at bangthebook.com, passed along to me yesterday that the mom's trip is Thursday, Friday for Chicago here in Boston and in New Jersey. Boston, a real tough game. New Jersey, everybody's kind of beating up on them. So if the Blackhawks lose to Boston on Thursday, and odds are good that they probably will, they'll certainly be a big dog in that game, look for them to bounce back against New Jersey there on Friday. They're not going to lose both with the moms, and they're probably not going to lose to a New Jersey team that just gave up 7 to the Sabres last night. But outside of that here, and again, we try to find these moms and dads trips as much as we can. Hard to find that information more often than not. Anything you do like here for this Tuesday night card?
Well, I think Washington San Jose is a terrific game, the get-out game, and I just think they can't help but score a truckload of goals in that game. That'll be a fun one to watch. It's the late game. Just double-check in. It's Holtby versus Jones. And, you know, Jones' save percentage is at .896. You hope he's got a great save percentage, but the way Washington plays, he's facing all these odd man rushes. I think that's a high-scoring game. The funny thing is, almost the way it worked out, almost gives me pause for concern, because I know he had said yesterday, you know, Vegas is playing the Rangers. So this, again, this is the kind of stuff we're talking about. Vegas plays the Rangers last night, play a solid game, and they win, you know, comfortably, 4-1. Devils go and get absolutely emulsified in Buffalo. That notwithstanding, at the end of the Vegas game, Vegas goes back to their hotel. The Devils got to answer questions why they stunk so bad, made the Sabres look like the Central Red Army team, and then hop on a plane and fly home. And all these players probably don't get home till 1:30 in the morning. And Vegas is lying in a hotel bed. No, it's back-to-back nights. Oh, the home team, back-to-back nights, play the home team. Who had the easier night? You know, I mean, so now there's a chance Sparks plays tonight. It'd be his first game in a Golden Knights uniform. And the Devils could be a mad team because they were thoroughly embarrassed. But, you know, it's funny. You know, you see Vegas 40, 50 cents on the road a lot of times, and they're only 30 cents here. The number's telling me that, you know, there's a belief that the Devils – pride's at stake here, and they show up, but they were a dog's breakfast last night. It was ugly. They just were a complete no-show. And honestly, the coach's job may be on the line tonight.
Ooh, yeah, it could be. That's an excellent point. Again, something, it's probably about that time to start thinking about stuff like that here in the NHL. I'll throw one at you here. Kind of like Montreal a little bit tonight. I know the Islanders play very, very well. They play a great brand of road hockey. They don't give up a lot of chances. Barry Trotz, one of the best coaches in the NHL. I think this is a difficult spot tonight, though. Back-to-back with travel, off playing Detroit last night. They did hold serve, one as more than a $2 favorite in that game. Now they're a small dog at Montreal. I agree with the line. I think from a, you know, numbers standpoint, some people are just going to say that the Islanders shouldn't be a dog here to Montreal, but tough back-to-back, and also, too, the Islanders played out west last week. So, you know, they've been traveling a little bit here of late. I just think this sets up as a difficult one tonight for the boys from Brooklyn.
Well, you're walking in front of a train here because this Islanders team is really – and they got games in hand on Washington. I mean, they're right there at the top of the list, you know, with Boston, Washington, and the Islanders, the top three teams in the East. The one thing I would say to you – I would say it is a correlated deal, especially if you like Montreal. You know, Carey Price, a great goaltender, but he runs hot and cold now. He's not what he was, but this Montreal team is fast, and they can score, and they can't stop anybody. They're a mess in their own end. I actually like goals in the game. Normally, the Islanders limit chances. But if it's a game where the other team, you believe, because of the situation, would dictate the way the game is played, that would lend it to be a kind of a back-and-forth game. And I like it over 6, to be honest with you.
Brian Blessing, host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline. Brian, how can people check out those two shows?
Noon to 2 Pacific time, Adam, KSHP.com. You can listen to it live. Follow me on Twitter, Brian Blessing. We put the show links out every day, and the shows are archived at sportsbookradio.com, sir. So, you know, lots on the docket here. This stretch run, conference bowl, conference championship games, college football, with what's on the line for the playoffs, and then the bowl season begins. It's a great time of year, bud. There's a lot on the plate, and we, you know, on Sportsbook Radio, we really call on the other side of the counter and have the top sportsbook directors in Vegas on a daily basis on the show. So we love doing it, and hope you listen.
And, of course, make sure you keep an eye out for some videos from Brian Blessing over on our Bang Book YouTube page here as we go throughout the week. Brian Blessing, again, Sportsbook Radio, KSHP.com, as well as Vegas Hockey Hotline, at Brian Blessing on Twitter. Appreciate your time as Appreciate your time as always, sir. Thank you so much for joining me. We'll talk to you again next week.
I'm trying to pat you on the back from 1,900 miles away.
There you go. There's Brian Blessing again, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline, at Brian Blessing. All right, we got one more guest, one more segment here for this December 3rd edition of Bang the Book Radio. That is professional handicapper Ralph Michaels from WagerTalk.com. Ralph, how's it going today, man?
Going great, Adam. Always enjoy Tuesday mornings with you, and even more exciting when we get to talk both college hoops and college football.
Yes, sir, and also a little bit of a reduced college football board here for this week, and you know, obviously the bowl games kind of spread out a little bit, so that's got to be nice for you. I know it's been a massive grind dating back to the summer, getting ready for college football, now all the college basketball stuff. Nice to get at least something that kind of amounts to a breather.
It is, and you know, like anything else, when you have multiple sports that you're trying to do and do well, it's always easier when you're winning and it's tougher when you're losing. But, you know, as handicappers, it's a lesson for our bettors as well. You know, there are times when you just need to take a breath. And if things aren't going great and you're treading water or losing, just take a break and step back a second and reevaluate and then go back at it again. It's a long season. Missing one session or one day of games doesn't mean that it's going to ruin your season.
And another thing too, and you know, I've talked with a couple different people about this here. You know, every year in December, I kind of like to reevaluate, you know, a lot of things about my life, not talking about New Year's resolutions or anything like that, but you know, just sort of assessing how things went over the year. And from a handicapping standpoint, it has not been good for me. You know, about 500 in both contests. You know, it was a decent college football season, not great, an awful baseball season. And you know, one of the biggest things here is that bankroll management is so important, whether you're doing well or you're not doing well. You know, betting responsible amounts, very important. If you're getting irrationally angry about losing games, you're probably betting too much money. And, you know, it's one of the things that I've kind of had to do and take a look at here as I'm going throughout the season is, you know, understanding what percentage of my bankroll is going to which sports and, you know, all the different stuff that goes into this business. And it is a year-round business at that. You know, it's very important here at this time of the year and at several points throughout the year to just sort of evaluate, you know, if you're betting what you should, what your bet amount should be, tracking your results so you know which sports are your best. All that stuff's very important.
Absolutely. And don't worry about what the other guy is betting. What the other guy is betting is irrelevant. There's a million guys that bet more than I do on games. But you have to bet what you're comfortable betting. And that's what makes the difference is, you know, if you go to the window and a guy ahead of you is betting 10 G's on a game, which happens to me, and I'm, you know, only a percentage of that, it doesn't make you a less of a person. It just means, you know, you're betting the responsible amount of your bankroll that you're able to withstand, and you're betting a percentage of what your overall bankroll is. So, you know, if you're at a sports bar and guys give you a little grief because you're only betting this much relative to what they're betting, don't worry about it one bit.
Yeah, and keep in mind, too, you know, you grind more, you'll be at that level, too, you know, from having success here in this business. So we take a look here at the conference championship games, and Ralph, we start on Friday with a matchup we haven't seen yet this season. 5 of the 10 conference championship games we have already seen in the regular season. This is not one of them. Oregon and Utah. Utah, 6.5-point favorite. 7 has popped at Bovada, which obviously means that Utah is the public side here so far in this one. But it does look like some of the sharp interest on Utah here thus far as well.
Absolutely. You know, you're going to handicap motivation in these games. And, you know, obviously the motivation is quite different between these two teams. You know, Oregon going to a Rose Bowl is nice, but Utah getting to a playoff potential. I think they're playing first. So that's what you have to remember. On Friday, Utah plays this game and they're not scoreboard watching because there's no other games on Friday. You know, they win this game, they have a legitimate shot to go to the playoffs. And I look at what their defense has done. And, you know, in the last 6 weeks, they've held four opponents to a season low. And that's really what I look at this point in time. When you're comparing yards, you know, so many teams play different tempos and different styles that yards to me isn't important. But if you have played a 12-game schedule, and in the last six games, you've held four opponents to their season low, you know you are playing legitimate defense. And I look at what they've done, and boy, in the last 7 weeks, they have allowed about 200 yards per game. One opponent had over 270 yards in that stretch. That was a game at Washington where they did give up 316 yards passing. I just think I look at Utah and their D-line doesn't get enough credit. You know, everyone has always said they're a top five D-line in the country. The way they're playing right now, I really think Utah has the best D-line in the country and a couple DBs to go with it. When you can play that kind of defense and rush three or four people and get pressure, that's the kind of team you love to back.
You know, and it's amazing to me that I don't think what Utah is doing is getting enough national respect. I think in the betting community, they're getting a lot of respect because their lines get bet up just about every week. You know, almost week in and week out, they're a big favorite in a fairly low total game. There's certainly some interesting, you know, correlation between the sides and the totals for their games where they're even covering, you know, as a 21-point favorite with a total of 37, as a 16-point favorite, the total of 47, won and covered eight straight here for Utah. I've not been impressed at all with Oregon down the stretch. And even that USC blowout, a lot of weird things happened. At one point, they had like 49 points in that game with like 250 yards of offense. That was a real strange game. Not nearly, you know, the performance that the final score would indicate. You know, they covered that game. They covered against Arizona. Arizona's a dumpster fire. Oregon's body of work just doesn't impress me. And I understand why this line's gone up. I understand why this line probably gets to seven here at more than just the publicly tuned shops. I think Oregon obviously does want to win the division or does want to win the conference. They do want to go to the Rose Bowl. I just don't think they're good enough to do it. I think Utah's got to be the side here just because they've been stunningly consistent. Whereas Oregon, week in and week out, I don't really know what I'm getting.
Well, you know, let's compare quarterbacks, Huntley or Herbert. You know, Herbert might go higher in the draft, but Huntley's the guy that has been able to move the ball and get your first downs on the ground as well. Hell, he has five rushing touchdowns to go with a 16-2 ratio. Zach Moss, to me, is probably the second best running back in the country. And again, like you said, doesn't nearly get enough credit. You know, people know Zach Moss is going to run the ball. There's no question. Yet the team is averaging over 200 yards per carry, almost 200 yards per game, almost 5 yards per carry. Zach Moss has 1,200 yards, 15 touchdowns, 6.2 yards per carry. It's a team that, again, I agree with you. Publicly, they don't get enough credit because they're playing on the left coast and they're playing at night and they're not a sexy team. But when you have a quarterback that is a 16-2 ratio and you have Zach Moss and you have one of the best defenses in the country, you're a damn sexy team when it comes to betting them against the spread.
Well, not only that, I mean, Kyle Whittingham is an excellent head coach. They've got an advantage in that department here, too, over Mario Cristobal, who's a very good recruiter, but I don't think his in-game and his preparation is on the level of Kyle Whittingham, who now is probably head, shoulders, knees, and toes the best coach in the Pac-12. With Chris Peterson deciding to move on, which was quite a bombshell here this week.
Yeah, and, you know, hey, good for Peterson. Hopefully it's not a health issue, and hopefully he just got tired. And, you know, it's refreshing that a coach can step away like that, and it's good. I mean, you know, it has to be hard for these coaches. I mean, sure, I'm sure Peterson's in that $4 million a season range. So to step away from that kind of money means, number one, you're probably pretty comfortable, and number two, you've just had enough. And I'd much rather see that than a coach try to extend a stay because he needs the cash or just wants to stay as long as he gets the boot.
All right, so like I said, that first game, Oregon and Utah, those two teams didn't play in the regular season. In the next two games we're going to hit, Louisiana, App State, Baylor, Oklahoma, those teams did play in the regular season. Cincinnati and Memphis, of course, just played last week. Hawaii and Boise State played each other. That was a real shootout type of game on the blue turf. Now, Wisconsin, Ohio State, as we know, they also played each other. So when you get these rematch situations in the conference championship game, Ralph, just as a whole, not looking specifically at these two games just yet, how much do you factor that first game into the equation?
Well, you know, let's start with this, Adam. If we have a scenario that I need to get some numbers and look at the database, well, let's look at what the numbers really are so we know the legitimate numbers. We're not talking about this game, but let me just throw it out there. Since 2007, there have been three times when teams have played back-to-back games, like Memphis and Cincinnati. Stanford, UCLA, 2012. Boise and Fresno in 2017. Middle Tennessee and UAB in 2018. I'll just say this. A sample size of three is pretty small. The favorite has gone 2-1, but the dog has gone 3-0 against the spread. So that would be Memphis and Cincinnati. When we're looking at teams that have played each other in the same season in a conference tournament, a conference game. So this is a conference finals, with the exception of there's been like one or two times where two conference teams played each other because of some fluky schedule. But since 1998, there have been 49 times where teams have played each other. And the old adage is what? It's hard to beat a team twice. Well, the team that won the first game has gone 29-20 straight up in the second game. But against the spread, they've gone 23-23-3. So exactly 50% against the spread, 29-10 straight up. But if the favorite won the first game and they're the favorite in the rematch, they've gone 19-2 straight up the last 21 games, and they've gone 13-7-1 against the spread. So you know, for those that say, oh, well, they won and covered the first game, they're not. Well, 19-2 straight up is pretty strong. 13-7-1 against the spread is pretty strong as well.
Yeah, and of course, in this year's round of conference championship games, that means Boise State, Memphis, Ohio State, and Oklahoma. So again, 19-2 straight up. If they were a favorite the first time and they won and they're a favorite here in the rematch, 19-2 straight up, 13-7-1 against the spread. So with that, we go to this Sun Belt Conference Championship game of Louisiana and App State. App State was the dog down in Lafayette when these two teams met in the regular season, won that game 17-7. A lot of money came in on Louisiana in that game. Since then, a lot of money is coming in Appalachian State in just about all of their games, and a lot of money coming in here this week. Some offshores got caught with their pants down, opening as low as 3 on this game, now 6.5 or 7. But what's really interesting to me, the total in the first game was 69, and it finished 17-7. Total in the rematch here in the 56 range.
Well, you look at their tempos. I mean, they're not ULL's a higher paced team, averaging 70 plays per game, and App State is just below that with 70. And I was surprised when I did my stat sheet this week and comparing the two teams. The strength of schedule exactly even, 113-114. And if you say, who's the more impressive team? In my head, I would have said App State. But looking at yards per game diff, ULL has played a one slot tougher schedule than App State, or exactly even. And they're number 10 in the country at plus 131 yards per game. App State is number 15 at plus 115 yards per game. And in yards per play, App State is plus 1.4, and ULL better at plus 1.7. But with that said, there's no way in the world, there's only one way for me to bet this game, and it is Appalachian State. You look at the ULL injury report for that ULM game. Boy, if you weren't on ULM last week, they were missing their nose tackle. They were missing both safeties. They were missing their linebacker. They had four or five defensive players, and they got a guy who got booted out for targeting. They gave up 570 yards, their worst performance of the season. This is the team that played Mississippi State and played Ohio and, you know, and played a lot of teams and allowed 570 yards per game. Couple guys may be back. Couple guys may not be back. You know, like the nose tackle, who is probably their most important player, has one of those injuries where he definitely is going to have surgery. If he can survive the pain this week and not have surgery before the game, he might give it a go. But the way they are banged up on the defensive side, it's simple. It's App State or pass for me in this game.
Well, and App State beat Louisiana twice last year, although Louisiana, obviously, a much better version of themselves here this year. It was 30-19 in the title game. It was 27-17 in the regular season. Both games in Boone at Appalachian State. Appalachian State's got a little bit of elevation, too, by the way. So that's something to keep in mind here, maybe for the second half of this game. I will say this, you know, one of the things about strength of schedule that is a little bit difficult here at this time of the year is that, you know, North Carolina maybe doesn't have the record. South Carolina clearly doesn't have the record. But, you know, those are two Power 5 conference teams where South Carolina just had a little bit of a down year. They played one of the most difficult schedules in college football, too. So App State, I think it's hard to say that they played a slightly worse schedule just because they had those two group of five teams. But, look, the primary thing for me, and maybe sometimes we overcomplicate handicaps like this, App State is the king of the Sun Belt. They just are, period. And until somebody knocks them off that, you know, isn't Georgia Southern playing that option, I have a hard time picking against them. So a lot of lost line value in this game with the move from 3 to 6.5. But still, I mean, App State, just these are the games that they win and they cover here in this conference.
Well, Adam, your assessment of the strength of schedule is very astute. And, you know, I'm going to add one thing which adds a little bit to the App State point. If you look at conference-only stats, App State is plus 192 yards per game. ULL is plus 98 yards per game. So, you know, you have a 94-yard per game difference, almost double the yards, looking only at conference play between these two foes, which really, when you're looking at the MAC and CUSA and, you know, and the group of five teams, you really need to be focused only on the conference-only stats relative to the full season because of the disparate non-conference schedules.
All right, so we take a look at another rematch here. Game 109-110 is Baylor and Oklahoma. Oklahoma, 8.5 or 9-point favorite here for this one in Arlington. Ironically enough, something for you to keep in mind here on Saturday, Baylor basketball plays a huge game. I can't remember who they play on Saturday. I'll have to look it up here as we're talking, but they play a huge game on Saturday, and I bet no one's going to be there because Baylor, about a 2-hour drive up to Arlington for this conference championship game here in the Big 12. But two things are very interesting about this one here, Ralph. Oklahoma, a 9-point favorite. They were a bigger favorite on the road in Waco. They were a 10.5-point favorite in the regular season meeting. Also, the total here adjusted down 6 points, closed 62.5 in Waco, or 68.5 in Waco, excuse me, 62.5 here now, but maybe that's the reason why this total is going up a little bit.
The Arizona Wildcats would be that foe that will be traveling in to face Baylor. You know, this is a game where, you know, like a lot of people, I say, boy, Oklahoma's defense has just gotten thrashed. But I'll tell you what, looking back at this game, their scores are so misleading. Against their last five foes, they held TCU to a season low. TCU only lost that game 28-24. TCU had 11 first downs, 204 yards, and 65 yards passing. They held Baylor to a number two low. Baylor scored 31 points on only 307 yards and 18 first downs. They held Oklahoma State to a number two low. Oklahoma State, again, the Sanders injury and the wide receiver injury, we understand that. Texas, they held Texas to a season low 305 yards, but gave up 27 points. So you look at their yards, they're only allowing, they're allowing under 20 first downs per game and 336 yards per game. But it's their points that are misleading. The Iowa State a 1-point win, the Baylor a 3-point win, the TCU defense a 4-point win. So, you know, they have the, I don't know what the opposite of bend and don't break is. Bend and don't break defense would be giving up a lot of yards and a lot of points. They have the break but don't bend defense that they're giving up a lot of points on big plays, and then they hold people on yardage. So a lot of penalties, a couple mistakes in the special teams category. You know, with that said, with that said, though, I went back and forth on this game. It's one where I'm not going to have a strong opinion on it. I lean with the under in the game. And if I'm leaning the under in the game, that makes me lean with a dog that is getting points with, you know, a coach, Matt Rhule, who, you know, has done an incredible job here. So, again, this is one of these, unfortunately, my most wishy-washy game of all the tournaments, and it has me leaning Baylor and the under.
Yeah, I mean, I can understand that. You know, you look at Oklahoma here, 52nd in the country in points per game allowed, 24.7. They have given up 26.3 in conference play. But, I mean, this is a defense that really isn't that bad. They're 42nd in yards per play allowed. So weird things happen in their games for one reason or another. One of the other things about Oklahoma that's been really concerning this year, they've played one good half and one awful half several times. Second half last week against TCU was a disaster. First half against Baylor was really bad. The fourth quarter against Iowa State was terrible. They should have blown Texas out in the Red River rivalry game. Left points on the field in the first half, played poorly in the second half. I don't know what's going on. I don't know if it's a Lincoln Riley thing. I don't know what it is, but for a full game, I cannot trust Oklahoma. And the problem is, I don't know which half is going to be their good half. So I don't think I'm going to play this game either. I understand being wishy-washy on it, but this Oklahoma team, it is incredible. They look like a legit top five, top three team one half and like a middle of the pack team in another half. I don't remember a team, you know, with as much potential, as much ability to be elite as this Oklahoma team has, and to see their full body of work, it's astonishing.
Yeah, you know, it really is. You know, let's add in another dynamic here. You know, you now need style points. You know, if Oklahoma gets the lead, and they're going to have known what Utah did, you know, they could be sitting on here that, do you perhaps have a bubble burst? I don't think so. I think as a coach, you could say, well, listen, even though Utah's ahead of us and even though Utah won, but if Utah blows out Oregon on Friday, how do these kids come up Saturday morning and go, well, shit, even if we win by 25, we're not going to make the playoffs. You know, does that mentality come into it? On the flip side, let's say this. Let's say Baylor has a 14-point lead. Are they all of a sudden going to go, oh, crap, last time we had a 21-point lead and we couldn't even hold them off? You know, so you have different dynamics there that you have to try to handicap. But I think the Utah result clearly is going to affect the Oklahoma game one way or the other with the players.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, obviously Oklahoma's going to want to win the Big 12 no matter what happens. But the style points dynamic is important because – you know, if they take their foot off the gas in the second half, and they've done that before here this year, do you really want to be holding Oklahoma -9? You know, or, you know, maybe it goes to 8.5, maybe it goes to 8, who knows? I don't want to hold a full game ticket in that regard. You know, but if Utah struggles, maybe only wins by 3, something like that, I'd be more inclined to take the Oklahoma laying 9 or something like that because, you know, that blowout is more in play because they won't take their foot off the gas. It is really interesting. There's a lot of side dynamics at play here in some of these games, and each and every one of these teams wants to win the conference, wants that trophy, wants that flag that flies forever, so to speak. But the manner in which they're going to go about doing it can change based on, you know, what happens in some of these other games.
There's no question. And, you know, listen, Oklahoma has been king of the Big 12. We know that. For Baylor to win a Big 12 title and go to a New Year's Six Bowl. They may go to a New Year's Six Bowl anyway, but for them to win this and go to a New York Six Bowl and have one loss, you know, Matt Rhule becomes coach of the year in my book. There's not even a question from what people thought he was going to do. So, you know, the motivation's a little different. You know, Oklahoma's goal is the national championship. And Baylor may very well say, listen, our goal is a national championship. But I guarantee you, back when they were playing SF Austin in August, Baylor players weren't thinking we can get to the playoffs. Oklahoma was, and that's the difference. People say, well, look, their one loss, yeah, their motivation or their goals are to get to the playoffs. But when you're talking about these motivations and goals, I'm talking about year-long goals where, you know, the Oklahoma players, when they came into practice last March, their goal was to get to the playoffs. You know, there's not a team, there's not a player on Baylor who thought they were going to make the playoffs. So when you have a season-long goal like that, it's so much different than just we're doing well and we've gotten there. I think Baylor is ecstatic just to get a one-point win and win the Big 12 title. So, you know, I don't think that the Utah result either way will get me on this game because, as I said, I was so wishy-washy. But I think that if you're an Oklahoma better, watch that Utah game. And if Utah gets behind, make sure you jump on Oklahoma before the game finishes and bet them if you want them. Now, just because you can run up the score doesn't mean you can. A lot of times that means there's added pressure and you're not going to be able to run up the score. But if you like Oklahoma anyway, and you get them before that Utah game is final, you're going to be paying a half or a whole point less because we know the public markets will be on Oklahoma the next morning after a Utah loss.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. You know, again, I mean, and you look back to last week with an example, Western Michigan losing on Tuesday in their MAC matchup against Northern Illinois, Central Michigan, all of a sudden with a chance to go to the conference title game, that line shot up, what, three and a half points before that game actually kicked off. So again, that's a really good example and something that you need to keep in mind here for future college football seasons, as well as, you know, here this week. Ralph, we transition over to the college basketball side of things. And before we look at a handful of games, I want to look at a couple tonight and a couple tomorrow, time permitting. News, notes, updates, thoughts, anything broad picture from around the country or on any specific teams that you want to touch on?
Well, like I do every December, the beginning of the year, look at those teams that are covering against the spread. And, you know, there's times when you get a team like Ohio State. Okay, we knew Ohio State was going to be good. We've seen them win some big games. We know they're 6-1 against the spread. You know, I'm not talking about the Buckeyes. I'm talking to teams like Tennessee State. Tennessee State comes in at 5-3. They had a 2-point loss at Chicago, Illinois, a 15-point loss at Texas Tech, a 13-point loss at San Diego State, and you may think nothing of them. Tennessee State is 6-0-1 against the spread. That's the perfect kind of team where you're getting some value, where they're 5-3 straight up. They're not a public team that people knows. The lines aren't moving in their games, but yet, boy, they've been competitive in every game. Sacramento State, another one. Yeah, they upset Pepperdine, but they lost to Colorado last week by 14 points. They still covered. Sacramento State, a perfect 4-0 against the spread. They're 4-1 straight up. The Hornets, again, not a public team. You get some value. UTEP, I threw UTEP in the mix. UTEP is 2-0 against the spread, but who knows what you have with the Miners because they've played three lower division teams. They're 5-0. Yeah, they covered the two games against D1 foes, but they're 3-0 against non-division foes. But other teams with these strong ATS starts to grab some value, Coppin State 8-1, Delaware 7-1, Yale 7-1, UConn, New Hampshire, Northern Iowa, all 6-1 against the spread. So take those teams and even though they may have a 500 or a losing record straight up, that's where you're getting value in December when you have straight up losing records and great ATS records for those teams keeping it close without by falling under the radar by not pulling the outright upsets.
Yeah, that's a really strong point. That's very important, especially those ones that are down well below the radar. Those are teams that, you know, obviously doing something right here to be able to cover numbers, not just in an underdog role against, you know, stronger conference schools, but also taking care of their affairs against comparable or lower competition. That's a really important attribute for some of these teams to have as well. Ralph, we take a look here tonight, Michigan and Louisville, and I think this one's really interesting for a variety of different reasons, the biggest of which being Michigan was very impressive out in the Bahamas at Atlantis. Louisville's been impressive, but Michigan's played a much, much more difficult schedule. Maybe that's part of the reason for the line move here down from 6.5 to 5.
Well, you know, how many teams have been non-ranked to what? What are they, 5? They have to be the first. That has to be the biggest jump there's ever been in the AP poll. But well-deserved, you know. Michigan, boy, has shot up my power ratings. I didn't have them in the mix. I had them as like the 5th best team in the Big Ten. I didn't think Juwan Howard was going to be able to do anything. And, you know, what is he? He hasn't playing elite defense. He has him shooting well, and they're just a quality team. But, you know, the concern to me is this. You look at Michigan's schedule at 7-0, and your first four home games, your first four games were at home, and the toughest opponent was Creighton. Then you go to a neutral setting, and yes, you beat Iowa State, North Carolina, and the Zags, but you're talking a small gym, neutral setting. You played great D. You're holding opponents to 25% on the three-point land, and you win the games. Well, now we're taking this same young Michigan team, and we're putting them in the first true road setting. And, you know, that's a whole different scenario, going to Louisville, facing a crowd that they have not seen the likings of. And, you know, I always enjoy having the best player on the team, and that's no question Jordan Nowar, 6'7", 22 points. You have a 6'7" guy who's shooting 50% from two-point and 50% from three-point. That's the exact kind of guy you want to have. So, you know, I certainly think Louisville wins the game. I am not strong enough on them to say they're going to cover, but I have a definite lean with the under. Louisville's defense has not been good from three-point land. I mean, they're in the lower range, and they have not forced a lot of turnovers, but they've had big leads, and I think that changes things. But I lean Louisville, and I lean the under.
Yeah, I think those are all very accurate points there, especially that first true road test. Some of these teams going to be running into that here. You've got the Big Ten ACC Challenge going on. I know some teams in the Big 12 and the Pac-12 play some really big non-conference games here for this week as well. But speaking of that Big Ten ACC Challenge, Duke and Michigan State tonight, and Michigan State taking pretty much all the sharp money, it looks like, here so far. Up from 5 to 6.5, even a 7 at bookmaker now. Some pretty rare territory in terms of the dog roll for Duke.
Yep. I tweeted out this morning because, of course, I had to look because I didn't know. As I'm looking for my tweet here, in the last 12 seasons, Duke has been a dog of 4 or more 12 times. And since 2012, they are 6-1-2 against the spread as a dog of 4 or more. The only game they did not cover as a dog was that game early in March last year against North Carolina, where Zion didn't play, and they went into Chapel Hill and they lost 79-70. So their only game they didn't cover was only a 9-point loss. So, you know, you're never going to get blown out if you're Duke. I mean, watching the Cassiuses line up, I mean, Winston and Stanley is going to be incredible tonight. I still think Michigan State, you know, isn't that same team without Langford. I mean, once they get Langford back, I think Michigan State is clearly the best team in the country. But, you know, Duke's got the young kids. Duke knows what to do with the young kids. You know, Vernon in the middle is just playing incredible as a freshman. I cannot say, I am not going to be on the game, but I can say this. I could not bet Michigan State and say, I gave Duke 6.5 points. What was I thinking? How stupid am I? So when you have that kind of statement, I certainly have a lean with the Blue Devils tonight.
All right, so we transition over to Wednesday, and this is an interesting game here, and I really want to get your take on this one because I do a situational article every week over at bangthebook.com trying to find just some kind of fascinating spots, and we've got Mountain West is in conference play starting on Wednesday. You know, the Big Ten teams actually get back into conference play after this Big Ten ACC challenge. But this game kind of jumped off the page to me a little bit. Penn and Villanova. It's actually the first tip-off of the day tomorrow. Penn beat Villanova for the first time since 2002 last year. And this is another one of those close geographic rivalries. Credit to Villanova and Jay Wright for playing a lot of these teams in the Philadelphia area in the non-conference. But Villanova should be a healthy favorite in this one tomorrow. Maybe not the same team they've been in the past, but they do have revenge on the brain.
Yeah, I mean, they play the Big Five every year, don't they?
I think they do, yeah.
Isn't it? Yeah, I mean, that you know, you have the Big Five in Philadelphia, and they play the round robin. So, you know, Villanova's the one team that might say, hey, we want out of it, but they haven't. So I agree, hats off. You know, you look at Villanova, and you only have losses to Baylor and Ohio State, so you could say, you know, you have probably two of the best losses there are out there. Baylor was a neutral setting, and Ohio State was at Columbus. The difference between Villanova and the team in the past is simply that you look at what Villanova lost to the NBA draft a couple years ago, and they lost four players, which is incredible because they're not Duke. They're not Kentucky. They don't get those elite recruits. And Jay Wright just turns three or four star recruits into great players. And traditionally, they stick around to their seniors. And that's where they've had these special seasons. Well, this year's different. He had 2 5-star recruits. He had 2 players that could have easily gone to Duke and started and gone to Villanova. Well, that's why he's rated so high, and that's why he has such a good team this year. I mean, Jeremiah Robinson Earl is as good as any player in the country this year. Given their situation with revenge, listen, Penn is what they are. They're a very good Ivy League team that shoots a ton of three-pointers, and, you know, when they make those three-pointers, like they did against Long Beach State, they could pull away. When they make some of those three-pointers, like they did against Arizona in a high-scoring game, they can keep it close. But it's also the same team that can go to Lafayette, a team much worse than them, and lose by 11, and go to Rice and lose by 19. So the question is, can Villanova defend the three-point? Well, they haven't so far. You know, that's the thing. Villanova is in the 240, 250 range, allowing 35%. So with the case, I think we're going to have a very up-tempo game. Penn's been running it much like they have. Villanova's been pressing the pace a little bit as well. With the familiarity of playing there every couple years, I lean with the over in the game. And, you know, when you're watching, you can clearly see if Penn's hitting some threes early, to me, it would be a live betting opportunity. If Villanova shuts them down early in the threes, I would expect Villanova to go on and crush. So while I don't have a play pregame, it is a game I'll be keeping my eye on because I love the teams. I love watching teams that are dependent on the three. And normally how a team starts shooting a three, that will continue. And it's certainly a live betting situation for me.
One more game here on Wednesday to touch on, and this one's going to get a lot of run, a lot of talk. Virginia and Purdue, and it's going to get a lot of run and a lot of talk because this may be the lowest college basketball total we've ever seen.
Yeah, I can't argue again. And let me just take a look here.
It's unbelievable what Virginia has done defensively. It's remarkable.
I tweeted out this morning that Virginia in their last game allowed 26 points to Maine, and Virginia's football team allowed what, 30 to Virginia Tech. So Virginia's allowing 40.3 points per game this year, and that's less than 3 college football teams did. I'm looking up totals right now, Adam. In my database, in 2007, there was a 98.5 total between Dartmouth and Princeton. and the game went under by 2.5 points. Cornell. Let me look at some of the more current ones. Virginia, Maine, the total was 105.5. 103.5, Delaware State, Howard. Yeah, we're looking at, I only have one total under 100. I have Cornell, Princeton at 100, Princeton, Columbia at 105, Brown-Princeton at 101. And those were the 2007 Princeton games where, you know, it was take every second on the shot clock and then shoot the ball. So I don't know. I don't know if it's going to get down to the 99s, but my first instinct would be just to take the under. And I like, you know, I like Purdue. I'm happy with what they've done. You know, Florida State, you're playing a better team in Niceville in a tournament where Florida State had the proximity. You lose in overtime. You go to Marquette against Howard and, you know, you lose by 10. You go to Texas and you lose by 10. But now you're at home. And what we've seen with Virginia is this. You know, I guess you went to Syracuse and you allowed 34 as well. I love watching Virginia. I absolutely will be watching this game. My instinct would be to bet the under, like you said, even if it's over 103, I will say this, I will be on the under. So, and I think it'll open 105, 106 because we're still early in the year. We have a lot of people still betting football. We don't have a lot of sharps on college hoops. There are some groups that have been hitting the totals, but you're not going to get those run at the totals where we had in those UCF Taco Fall days last year where, you know, it could open 111 and it can close 103. So I think there's value on that. Virginia is the slowest paced team in the country, and Purdue is number 348. So there's 353 teams, and we have the slowest and the fifth slowest. And we have a game that's going to be the best defenses both teams has faced. And we have a situation where Purdue is playing off a loss with some desperation. I pick Virginia to win by a basket, and I'm going to play anything under 103.
Ralph Michaels, professional handicapper over at wagertalk.com. Ralph, what's going on over there right now, man?
Well, you know, for those that need some college football information still, we have the stat compare sheet and got my power ratings, got a convenient one-page schedule. Be starting the NBA daily tip-off sheet tomorrow. And for those that like a little daily college basketball, Joe Ranieri and I do a daily podcast on college hoops at Wager Talk TV. You can make sure you check it out.
And of course, as always, make sure you follow Ralph on Twitter at CalSportsLV. A wealth of information over there on that Twitter timeline. Ralph Michaels, professional handicapper over at wagertalk.com. Thank you so much for joining me, man. Really appreciate it. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks, Adam. As always, a pleasure.
There you go. There's Ralph Michaels, professional handicapper over at wagertalk.com. Coming up on our Wednesday edition of Bang the Book Radio, we'll be joined by another Wager Talk pro. That is our mutual friend, Brian Leonard. We'll talk some NFL and some college football with him. Probably work in some NBA as well. And then we'll do our full segments with Kyle Hunter, professional handicapper over at huntersportspicks.com. Our college football first look, which is more of our college football second look. And then also we'll talk some more college basketball with him on our Handicapping the Hardwood segment. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. And I will talk to you again tomorrow.